I get my bunny girl fixes elsewhere. Hello and welcome to another Dead Pixel podcast about games, anime, entertainment, life, a little bit of everything in between. I'm your host, Joe, and with me, the gentleman who always reads the back of the book first, Nick. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing pretty good. Actually, I watched a video from like some world champion speed reader from like the 90s or something like that. And he was talking about how he became a speed reader. And he said, you have to read everything. You have to read the back of the book, the inside cover. You have to read all of the, just like read everything. All the time. And he had a bunch of other tips and tricks and stuff like that. I just thought that was like, it's like, okay. But I mean, he was champion speed reader. So I guess he knew what he was talking about, but, yeah, so that's why I always read the back of the book now. So that's enough about that. I'm doing good, Joe. How are you? How's your week been?
It's been all right. Been a little busy. No, as far as reading the back of the book, I've done that out loud in front of people who are in the middle of a series that I have no clue about. And I just start reading some random facts, just choose a random paragraph towards the middle, you know, or the end, and then watch them freak out. Be like, you know, because that's some dangerous spoiler territory right there.
Yeah. Never tell people what you're in the middle of. Not around Joe anyway.
I had someone who spoiled a bit of Harry Potter for me when I was working at GameStop. I'm like, yeah, I'm in the middle of, you know, like I happen to be in the middle of it because whatever, I hadn't gone through the book series. And then they literally blurted out a big thing. And I'm like, I just looked at him like, okay. Like, and then, you know, it's like, it really didn't bother me. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I was I guess they were hoping for me to be really upset. And I'm like, and then whenever they came back, they're like, yeah, you got any free swag or anything? I'm like, not for you. But for your friend, yeah. I'm like, well, it's like, yeah, I can be a jerk too. It's fine. And it's free and I don't have to give it to you because technically it's pre-order stuff. So yeah, you know, granted the game's been out for like a month, but you know, I can give it to your buddy.
What a bad person that person was.
It was one of those things that, yeah, I actually said, yeah, don't spoil anything for me. And then they blurted it out was the other caveat was just like, you know, and they're like, I'm like, all right, you know, I see what you did there. And
that person,
you
know, sounds like that guy, you know, like one of those people that just doesn't really get it, you know, socially or
you always have whatever. That coworker who has to say the sports things out loud, like when you're at work or if there's World Cup soccer was going on. And we had a guy who was always the office was pretty international there. And like, we'd be, you know, start saying like, I can't believe blah, blah, blah. I'm like out loud because they knew that half the office was like really anticipating this game and then just completely did it just to upset the office. And it's just like
it already aired or something.
It was like while it was going on. Okay. And they would get like a Twitter feed or something, or they'd get they'd read some sort of like, wow, like this, like so-and-so scored or like, I can't believe this happened. And it's just like, really? You're just going to do that. You don't even care about the sport. You're just doing it just to make people upset, you know? And you wonder why they actively hate you.
Yeah. I mean, just be cool, man. Don't be a jerk about stuff.
Well, all right. Talking about active hate, to the news.
Active hate. Yes. So not a lot, gotta be honest, but, a couple of the interesting things did happen this week. Top story, for me anyway, Nobuo Uematsu, the composer for many of the Final Fantasy games, he did 7, 8, and 9 for sure. I think he might have worked on 6 as well. I thought he worked on 10 as well, but the article I was reading made a point to say that he didn't say that he did. So I was kind of like, well, whatever. But anyway, this guy, Nobuo Uematsu, he was in an interview and he kind of mentioned that he thinks that modern game soundtracks are uninteresting. And I brought this up because I tend to agree. I think that game soundtracks have kind of gone the same way that movie soundtracks have gone, where they really don't want you to notice the music for a lot of the big games. It's just sort of like, I don't know. It's just kind of like a lot of, you know, cellos and violins and stuff that just sort of fades into the background, which, you know, is a style, but it's a little bit, I don't know. It's kind of, it's an element of games that I feel has, kind of gone away. Sort of like it has in movies too. Cause like the old games, like the ones that he composed for, those soundtracks are more iconic to me. I think because they focus on melody a lot more, and modern soundtracks, like even like Skyrim and stuff, you know, which isn't all that modern, but like, that's kind of where it started, where, I mean, you could play a Skyrim soundtrack for me and I would probably be like, yeah, that kind of sounds like Skyrim, but it's not definitive. So I was wondering what you thought about kind of this statement and, you know, game soundtracks in general today compared to where they were in the past.
All right. Well, as far as Skyrim is concerned, actually that opening title screen is amazing. Okay. I hate Skyrim as a whole. I actually, that kind of stopped me from playing the open world Bethesda games. And I think that was the final kicker for me for like, maybe high fantasy isn't my thing anymore. Used to be, but at that point I'm like, I'm done. But I also played Skyrim on the PS3, which was the worst way to play it. So my experience was very marred by that. The more you played, the worse it got. Like, it literally ran worse. So, but yeah, the opening song was, the title screen was just amazing. As far as, I think, all right, so Uematsu, he also did like Chrono Trigger and stuff, but the a lot of things is you're talking about from turn-based, you know, JRPGs. Yeah. I think the big thing is pacing nowadays with games is also a big, you know, difference, because the more open a game is and the more free-forming the style, it's harder to give a curated, you know, music section. So when you had games like Final Fantasy, you literally had to transition to a battle. You were able to have that certain type of battle music, while if you're playing a game that's more and more now is open world and you're not transitioning into a battle sequence, it's kind of hard to have I think MMOs have this problem when you're okay, now you're in a battle, and so we're going to kick in this battle music, and if it's a small battle, like just a, you know, like some sort of mob creature or something like that, like you quickly kill them, and so the battles just start, the music starts to ramp up, but then you already finished it, so now it's kind of still in that sequence where like we're playing the battle music and you're like, yeah, I'm walking away now, I'm already looting them. And then all of a sudden it just abruptly cuts. Yeah. And now you're in the open world field music again. That's the problem you have with a lot of those kind of modern games. You can get away with it more with a linear, like FPS or something like that, right? Or just any linear game where like you got to run from point A to point B, or you're being chased or something like that. You can obviously script the sequence and make that more tense or more action oriented. But as far as like a lot of current RPGs, I can see that being a little harder. Final Fantasy has the crutch of so many iconic theme songs and melodies. We're like, we'll just revamp those. We're going to take that old familiar song and like, we'll hit that. We'll do our own remix to it. Twinge that nostalgia bone. Like, oh, I know that exact four chords. And now they're doing their own thing with it. But that's enough to get, you know, to whet the appetite, as it were.
A good point about like, I think games are maybe in a weird way, they're more interesting moment to moment, and they're, you know, they're like more flowy. So it's a bit harder, and it's a bit less necessary to have like a really good song, really catchy song while you're looking at, you know, cause like in the old days, you know, you have a really catchy, good song that is playing while you, you know, walk around in this 2D space, talking to people and reading text. And modern RPGs are a little bit more involved than that. So that would, like, that's a good argument, like, against that. Like, but that you don't really need it as much. But I think that you could still, I still think that you could create melodies and stuff that were a bit more forward facing than a lot of what it is in games. It's kind of just a style, and that's just kind of what they prefer. But yeah,
I mean, and that's, you know, it's actually a choice. I'm trying to remember, and I could be wrong, but with Breath of the Wild, I thought that they actively chose not to use a lot of music in that. From what I remember, it being like, oh, like every now and then I'd realize they're playing a song or something, or there's a melody, but it's usually at key areas or locations. But as far as just actively walking in the fields or something like that, I don't really remember hearing much of anything. And, you know, it's to give you that sense of isolation. When it comes to a lot of the Uematsu, like, if I remember correctly, he was all self-taught. If I'm remembering his backstory correctly. But things like those early Final Fantasy, like 6 and Chrono Trigger, you know, like, those were very much his pieces really helped set the tone. But also, you couldn't do a lot of stuff with, facial animations and stuff like that. Or there wasn't a lot of acting. You know, that's one of the, features we have that current gaming, you can really do facial expressions really well. And you can do, but to get a lot more atmosphere back then from a pixel, you know, the music was key. I think also at the same time, this is also what I grew up with, though, is the limitations of the hardware really helped set the tone for the piece, because you had to make a catchy tune and something really good from a really small color palette.
A limited amount of sounds and instruments.
And that's why, some of the old, older games have some of the most memorable soundtracks. Like Streets of Rage 2 is one of the most acclaimed soundtracks, like, of all time, easily, because it's what you could do with a Sega Genesis audio chip was crazy. Like, it really wasn't a lot, but they made so much out of it. And that's why, when it came to those old JRPGs, you had these really cool sounds. And then they'd, of course, remaster them later on with actual orchestras and such. But back then it was just like, no, dude, check out this. It sounds like, it's the closest thing you had to a movie experience. Now when you can just literally drag and drop an MP3 of real instruments or the MIDI file of whatever, there's when the sky's the limit, it kind of, you almost get lost in, like, I don't know how to create anymore, because, like, when you have a smaller sandbox to work with, it really could, you're pushing it all the boundaries. There's a lot of composers who do wonderful things. And it depends, like I said, it really depends on the game, because I find a lot of, Darren Cobb from Bastion, like, his music is amazing. Hades, his work as well. So that's an amazing soundtrack. But then you have, I'm trying to think of, like, any current bigger, like, games like Spider-Man or something like that. And, like, they do the right, I remember, like, when you're swinging through the city, you have that right swelling of, music. Like, I remember it just provides enough atmosphere, but it's not really a soundtrack. So we're, like, as far as I'm going to sit in my car and listen to it. So,
yeah.
I think that's just the way, like, now it's more of an accompaniment more than a front center piece. Unless if it's a scripted event, then you can really have it. But as far as, games have just changed. And I think that's, there's an argument to be made there that it's a very different landscape than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. There is an opposing side there that does make a lot of sense. And, so I'm sure it's partially style and partially that the landscape has just changed. And it's just easier to do, the things that they've been doing. The other thing, in the news is Saber Interactive reported on this a little while ago that Embracer Group was shopping them around, looking to sell Saber Interactive. It looks like a buyer has been found. Beacon is going to try to buy them, or at least they've been sold for $247 million. At least that was the first update, or the first piece of news. There's been an update though that Beacon is exercising an option to purchase a few more studios, I guess, from Embracer Group as well. And it's going to swell the deal to $500 million. So there's a little thing there. But I just thought that since we had been talking about that prior, that we could follow up on it. So yeah, that didn't take too long. I guess Saber's probably got some pretty good stuff in the bag. You know, they're a good studio. It seems, at least companies seem to think so, because $500 million is still a lot of money, to me anyway.
Yeah, the it's funny because I heard someone say that put it as Saber was in, referring to them escaping the embrace of death.
Mm. Okay.
And I'm like, I hadn't heard that before, and I thought that was pretty clever. But yes, I don't actually know much about Beacon Interactive, so I wasn't 100% sure. Did you know anything else about them or their any of their catalog or what they do?
No, I haven't done any research on them. I just saw that update here a second ago. So, but they have money, so they've done something right, I guess. Or they've done the wrong things right. I don't know. Anyway, but that's just kind of interesting. Kind of all, it's big money being thrown around, and you know, Saber's not nothing, but that's a lot of cheddar. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all right. Well, good luck to them and you know, all the future endeavors. Hopefully we won't be hearing about a bunch of negative like layoffs in the near future. And
hopefully so, they don't gut them right away.
All right. And you know, anything else for the news this week?
I saw something weird about the good folks at the Pow World Studio, where basically we're like, hey, if somebody wants to come by us, they can. I just thought that was kind of telling that those guys probably want an adult in the room at some point. Yeah. It was just kind of funny to me. So I'll monitor that. I'll be monitoring that situation as it develops too. Not anything else really going on. I think I saw too that Helldivers has their very own Let Me Solo Her guy. I don't really know what all that means, but apparently they have a dude in Helldivers that's really good. I guess, I don't know, but that piques your interest. You can go Google that. I think it's on Kotaku.
Yeah. I mean, other than to just to catch up on something that we forgot to talk about last week, but we had mentioned the week before, was the Nintendo suing the Yuzu emulator. So they, before even getting to court, Yuzu went ahead and just straight up, you know, settled out and folded. And they're like, yeah, we'll pay $2.4 million. And, you know, we're going to go ahead and give up pretty much all their software. But essentially, there's good and bad to this, I guess. You know, the silver lining is because they settled everything out of court, there's no precedent for anything. So there isn't, you know, a lot of people were afraid that if this went to court, how would this negatively impact a lot of, you know, other, you know, emulations. And, you know, if Yuzu lost, therefore it'd make precedent and there'd be bigger grounds to stand on. But the other, you know, part is like, well, technically now, you know, Nintendo can, they have the money and the lawyers to throw the weight to throw around to accuse anyone of anything. And so all they have to do is bring up an issue and they could probably bully someone out of the, you know, out of the space.
So they settled. But, they settled out of court, though, right? They didn't actually go to trial. Yep.
They never went to court. So it's and they put a settlement saying, usually made a settlement that's, you know, which was most definitely written by lawyers, probably in this case, due to the settlement, probably both, probably actually dictated by Nintendo's lawyers. And then they read, you know, usually read it out loud being, or posted it being, you know, something along the lines of, you know, we never attended for our thing. We didn't know our things were being used for piracy. We never attended to that. Piracy is wrong. And, you know, so on and so forth, which, I mean, the big problem is, you know, when you're literally posting about how you can play a game that's not out yet and join your Patreon. I think the numbers were something like people were saying Yuzu was getting like 30,000 a month from Patreon. I mean, but still, even that, you know, that would take forever to get to the 2.4 million mark. So, I mean, Nintendo has the, you know, they're able to, I'm curious how that'll pan out, because they've bullied other people for an exorbitant amounts before to bankruptcy and such. So yeah, it's kind of a black eye in a lot of ways on Nintendo. You know, a lot of people are really upset because, like, wait, why so late in the game? That's the big question. It's like, you know, the big game they're talking about was when the new Legend of Zelda came out, you know, Tears of the Kingdom. It's been out for a bit. Why did you wait so long to now jump, you know, like jump down on them? It's like, you know, drop the hammer.
And legal stuff takes a long time. It has to, you have to, the sales have to bear out. The research has to be done. It's going to take a while. But whenever they got what they needed, that's why Nintendo decided to strike, you know, at that point. It's like, if you're gonna have an emulator, you really need to keep things separated. You know, you're gonna have a Patreon and stuff like that. Don't get greedy. Don't start advertising for all the illegal stuff your emulator can do. That's ridiculous.
That's the thing, is that that's where, you know, because it's perfectly, you know, emulators by themselves perfectly fine, and it is perfectly fine to expect or to want compensation for the thing you created. Now when you're actively promoting and trying to help coming out with patches, day one patches for, you know, things that shouldn't be, you know, or like fix it, you know like oh yeah, the new game came out and coincidentally our emulator has a patch that happens to fix that new game problem that, you know, shouldn't be a thing. You know, that's, it brings a lot of shade. But anyways, it's just one of those things that, like, you know, we had mentioned it before. It was a quick, you know, within a week or something like that, it all went down.
It is a super interesting topic, because there's a whole YouTube house of cards that is going to fall apart at some point, with like all the content that gets reused and put on YouTube and stuff like that, and who owns that. And nobody wants to really go to trial over it, because precedent, you know, if somebody loses, they kind of ruin it for everybody, no matter which side it's on. So it's a really good, example of a Mexican standoff, to be honest. So I don't know, like I think it's going to happen one of these days. And I'd be willing to bet, well, I would say that Nintendo is the most likely to fire the first shot, in that field. You know, whenever they have a chance on like emulators and stuff like that, they do go ahead and drop the hammer. But they're almost always really sure that they're going to win. And the YouTube stuff, they piddle around a little bit, but they haven't ever really, I don't know, gone to war with free speech, and journalistic whatevers, yet. So I just,
well, they have actually come out, the YouTube space, to the point where people not, have lost entire channels.
Yeah, but people always fold. There hasn't been a knock down, drag out, go to trial, and let...
No one can afford that. And that's the thing, is Nintendo has the money to back them up. Like, there's no way...
My point is that it hasn't happened yet. So there's not any precedent. Eventually, it's gonna happen. Eventually, Nintendo is going to come up against somebody or a group of people who are going to say no, and somebody's going to lose. But it's gonna be a little while still, because like you said, like nobody has the money to go up against Nintendo, who's going to throw around, you know, tens of millions of dollars.
Because probably gonna be the corporation. The problem is, like you mentioned, the knockdown drag out fight. The drag out is what they can do. They can most definitely drag proceedings to the point where if you even though you were able to have you have a good point to stand on, you can't afford to drag it out, because it's a war of attrition, and they can.
That's why it's gonna be another big company. It's gonna be. I mean, I don't know if IGN really is big enough, but it would have to be like an IGN or Samsung or Google itself, that would have to be like, no, you guys are overstepping. And it probably, and it, you know, and that probably is the biggest reason why it wouldn't be Nintendo, because Nintendo isn't going to, at least the way they are now, legally savvy as they are now, they're not stupid enough to get into a fight that they could lose. They only go after small fries and people that they know that they can beat. So it might be somebody else that's not as legally savvy. But anyway, it reminds me of scene, but it's just so interesting to me, because I'm just waiting for that matchstick house to come crashing down.
You just want to sit on the sidelines with your Dune bucket of popcorn.
I just want to watch the world burn.
All right, so this is gonna be a little shorter. This is one of our shorter episodes today, so we're gonna go ahead and skip over pretty much what we've been playing for next week. But then just real quick cap of what we've been watching. So you kind of wanted to mention this last time, but you bumped it to this week. So what have you been watching?
I watched Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. This is a show that had popped up on my Netflix a long time ago. And I was like, that looks like one of those anime. And I was just like, whatever. But I saw that it had good reviews, good ratings. And then there was a YouTuber that I respect, mostly because he pulls no punches. But he was a YouTuber that reviewed it. And he was like, hey, this is actually... pretty good anime. And so I was like, okay, so I put it on my list and still didn't watch it for a long time and finally got around to it. So this is a show, based on a light novel, I think by the same name. And it is, it's a weird little anime. Kind of the long and the short of it is, it's about quantum physics problems, but in a teenager high school context. That's the best way that I know how to describe it. They also talk about a phenomenon that I was not really aware of and didn't do any further research on, but maybe you have, Joe, I think it's called adolescent syndrome, I think is what they called it in the show. And it seems to be like weird magical things that happen to adolescents. I didn't really get what it really was about. I don't really understand what that part was really about. But anyway, the show itself, is about a young man. And he can see a girl in a bunny girl outfit walking around the school library, and nobody else can see her. And he talks to her and she's like, oh, you can see me. And they go about solving why no one else can see her. That's like the first couple episodes. And then it okay. goes on to kind of some different stuff.
See here. So when you said adolescent syndrome, the first thing that came to mind was, are you talking about Chunibyo's? Because that sounds like Chunibyo's, but no, it's according to a quick YouTube search or YouTube Google search that pulled up Reddit was adolescent syndrome is a made up alignment for the show. It basically refers to how the character personal issues from their desire to give into the quote unquote atmosphere manifest themselves as physical or supernatural alignments.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. So it's not like a real or it's not like a real fake thing or anything like that. It's something that just the show or the story made up itself. Anyway, it's a good little anime. It's the characters are good. The storylines are pretty good. It's kind of these little 3-episode arcs, more or less. I think the last one's a little bit longer. But yeah, it's not what I thought it would be, which was sort of just kind of melodrama or, you know, some sort of like ecchi type thing. I think it uses ecchi to get you in the door and then uses quantum, like, what does it say? You know, come for the ecchi, stay for the quantum physics. That's that old adage. So anyway, it's pretty good, and I'd recommend it. There are 2 movies that they have made. I think the TV show came out in 2019, and there's a movie that came out in 2021, and another one that just came out in 2023. And I was gonna try to get around to watching those.
All right. Well, that explains why I kept on. I've seen it pop up on back when I had Netflix multiple times, and I just assumed it was sort of rehashing like the algorithm to me again. So that it does explain when the movie came out, because I thought it was just a movie. You know, so I think at the time I might have thought it was a TV show, but I'm like, oh, okay, just a movie, all right, whatever. And I just didn't like. I'm like, I just didn't feel like watching it. I get my bunny girl fixes elsewhere. I don't know. but at least you did out yourself for coming in for the ecchi.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to explain that, but you know,
talking about quantum physics and like other, you know, interesting stuff. I think the big thing is I was expecting it because the quality of the art looked pretty good. I was expecting it to you know, potentially get an English dub in the future, and that's kind of what I was waiting for, but it never did.
Yeah, it never did, so, which was kind of weird. But maybe it just wasn't popular enough or something.
But that's, you know, that's kind of what I was hoping for. I was like, yeah, I'll watch it when it comes to like English dub, but I didn't feel like putting in the effort. But what I did put in the effort on is actually what I've been watching. So there was when it first came out, this was a while ago, I mentioned a anime called Dark Gathering. It is a horror based anime. You know, it just recently has been getting English dubbed. So I was like, okay, cool, because I started watching it in Japanese and I just lost track because there's so much other things. So I'm like, I don't have time to follow this as a subbed. The concept is main character got involved in some supernatural stuff and then became a shut-in kind of. But then with the help of a friend was able to finish out high school and now is going to uni. And now they're also a tutor on the side and they're pretty smart. So they end up through the agency, ends up he finds this he's tutoring this young girl, elementary school kid, who happens to also be a certified genius. But the big thing is she straight up like fights supernatural things. She actively searches them out, and they do a lot of these Asian horror tropes, but they do them in a kind of a fun and decent way. I think the atmosphere in the first couple episodes are really solid. They do the right type of like sound effects, noises and stuff like that. You know, when you're expecting to like they go visit a haunted phone booth and you're listening to the screeching horror like noises coming from the end of the speaker, you know, speaker box, as it were. You're like, all right, yep, that totally fits the Asian horror aesthetic. They got the, you know, ghost with super long hair and stuff like that, but it's creepy enough, but it's also the animation is really light. Like if looking at the character design alone, you're like, oh, this is a childish thing, right? This is for like younger kids. But then you're looking at the actual horror elements and like, oh yeah, those ghosts and those whatever, like those are pretty terrifying in a way that I'm like, you should not be showing these to little children. It's but it's entertaining. I've went ahead and I only watched the first handful of episodes subbed, but then I'm currently up to episode 13 now in English dubbed. And you know, it's a 25 episode series, so it's a long running series as far as anime is concerned. And yeah, I've been enjoying it. I'm not a big horror fan, and this isn't really that scary as a whole, but it is interesting, I guess, and it's a good way to kill the time. Something that I've mentioned before a couple times now has been The Dangers in My Heart. Well, I decided to show this to my spouse because the entire season one got dubbed. Season two is almost finished now. They're up to episode 10, I believe, subbed. And season two has been really good. I mean, season one was solid, but season two has really not disappointed at all. And I was just like, so I was talking up about how season two I was really enjoying, so my wife decided to go ahead and give it a shot, and we ended up like burning through all season one, and she's all caught up on season two now within a short amount of time. Totally worth, like, it's a rom-com. You know, this one, you actually are the one who introduced me to it originally. You got to get past the first two or three episodes. It's,
I mean, I've been hearing a lot of good things, not just from you. I mean, this is pretty widely, you know, loved, I guess, anime in the current seasons and stuff. And also I was looking at, some manga top lists on some site or whatever. And it wasn't like at the tippy top or anything like that, but the manga was pretty high up in popularity too. So
problem with this is the first couple episodes. You think this kid's just a really edgelord little child. He's just like, you know, he's a middle schooler who all about, you know, he's going through his dark emo phase essentially. He's mm-hmm. he's reading books about serial killers and murderers, and he like the really cute popular girl who's also a model. She's like, he's like, I want to kill her. But then he quickly discovers that he actually likes her. And, you know, there's a lot of cringe in there, but it's like, it's relatable cringe. I feel the side characters are all pretty solid in a lot of ways, with the exception of his male classmates. But like some of the other, like the some of the Yamada, the main female lead, some of her friends are pretty solid. The main character, his sister, is an amazing character. She doesn't show up much until the end of season one, and then she's in season two from time to time. But like a solid, like that brother sister dynamic is pretty good as far as anime goes, and it's just really enjoyable because it goes from like just get past this handful of first couple episodes. And then it just continues to get better. And like season two really impressed me with the fact that I expected them to dip, you know, but actually it's been there. The characters make progress, and that's the key. It doesn't stay in this weird, like you don't spend like three seasons, like we'll eventually hold hands or something like that. You know, it doesn't do, you know, any of that stuff. It, you know, it's moving at a decent pace, and I highly recommend watching it. Yeah. If you like a good rom-com, hands down.
Yeah.
And then something that I just kind of came across because it was a little, it's you know, the current season, anime season's about to end. A lot of things are coming up, like episode 10 and 11 right about now. So I came across Dr. Ellis, the royal lady with the lamp. This is a reincarnation tale. So essentially, if you were she dies in like I don't know, it's a like a, kind of a alternate, I don't think it's quite isekai, but it's like a Victorian time frame. she's essentially burnt at the stake, reincarnates in our current time, and then this person grows up to be a very good surgeon, and then is killed. She dies and then is reincarnated or deincarnated back to her previous life with her current set of, like, with her first original life's knowledge when she was burned, and then her current timeline knowledge of her being a doctor. Now she gets to go back in the past and try to live her best life before she screwed it all up. So it's kind of a wild ride there. It's them essentially, because, you know, she was a hoity-toity noble family. This is most definitely a shoujo manga. Has the same male prince character archetype, design that's in, like, a lot of shoujo manga. It's always that black hair, has to have a couple bangs crisscrossing the face.
Oh, yeah.
It's
they always, like, looked so oily.
And it's almost the same character for the same prince archetype from, like, the Seventh Loop anime that's currently going on that I'm really digging as well. And, or, like, if you go as far back as, like, the old Clamp stuff, like Card Captors or something like that, or X, that Clamp made, it's just kind of generic cookie cutter. This is the pretty boy shoujo manga male lead. But the series is entertaining. It's really good. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did, but I went ahead and gave it a shot, and I'm more like, within the last week, I've pretty much watched all 10 episodes. So, there's only a couple left.
Okay.
So you've kind of burned. Totally surprised.
Burned through it. Yeah, it really is. Surprised by how much you like it.
Yeah, it's literally, so out of the two shoujo manga series, like the Seventh Loop and this one, this Dr. Ellis, yeah, it's most definitely a unique twist, and it's not the typical, reverse harem situation that they always seem to be. So, yeah, anime, entertaining, right? But actually, it is. So, pretty soon we're gonna get a bunch of new lists for anime coming out next season, and I've seen a lot of key visuals, posters, and stuff for some of their new stuff, and we'll talk about that next episode, because hopefully there's more and more dropping every day.
Yeah,
and I'll give you some of my impressions, because a lot of manga that I never expected to get animated are finally coming to fruition, and I'm like, and then also some weird stuff getting, like, sequels and stuff that shouldn't really be getting. So yeah, we can go ahead and rant about that when the time comes. So hopefully next week we'll have some good stuff to talk about.
When the time is ripe, we will rant. Okay, that sounds good. Do you have any plans for what you're gonna watch coming up, or just sticking with what's here already?
Pretty much. I've already talked about everything. I was not expecting to watch the most recent one, because I've just been sticking with my all the current stuff till, almost everything's finished now at this point. We got maybe a couple episodes left, because most of them are 12 episode seasons. So in about 2 weeks, everything should be finished. And nothing new that I can think of. I know you were thinking about one or two, like, side pieces, like movies or something short, but I wasn't 100% sure. So if you watch, is there anything you recommend that I should watch, essentially?
I think besides a Rascal, you're already watching, are you still keeping up with Delicious in Dungeon?
Yeah, that one's supposed to be 20. I think that's going to 24 episodes.
Yeah,
and they just finished episode 11 like yesterday. So
yeah, I've been watching that. I hadn't watched through episode 11 yet. I started that episode and then I had to leave and do something else. But I mean, that one,
there's a huge cliffhanger, so you might want to wait till next week and just watch them both back to back if you don't want a cliffhanger.
I'm okay with a cliffhanger. Besides that, I mean, there's not really too much that is sticking with me. I've actually got to catch up on a bunch of other anime myself. So it'd be silly for me to try to recommend something besides what I already have. But yeah.
All right. Well, so you know, as usual, thanks for sticking to the end. It's been a little shorter one this time around. This has been Another Dead Pixel, episode 67. So Nick, what do you have for advice for all the people out there?
Always remember to salt your food while you're cooking it, not after, because it will work better in general that way.
All right then. And if you have any issues, go ahead and put them on the comments and just yell at Nick about how he cooks.
Yeah.
Then we can roll off into a whole new cooking show, Cooking with Nick.
Yeah. Based on people's complaints, where I just do what people tell me to do in their complaints on YouTube.
Well, I want you to cook. There are already shows out there, but I want you to cook all the anime food, all the anime food. Just cook it. And then we can go to the gaming as well. So you can make the Monster Hunter dishes. Yeah. I expect to see that from you.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for making it to the end. Until next time, y'all take it easy.
Bye.